In the second reading today, St. Paul tells the Philippians that they should rejoice always. And he repeats it. I say again, rejoice. The Lord is near. It is that presence of the Lord that is cause for rejoicing. Now we can look at that in several different ways, as we've now made it three-fourths of the way through the season of Advent. The church dons its rose-colored vestments, you know, today, as a sign of hope and joy as we draw near toward Christmas, that the time of penance is drawing to a close, and it gives us hope and encouragement, you know, as we hasten on our way with joyful expectation at the celebration of our Lord's first coming to us. You know, at the same time, St. Paul was looking forward to the second coming of Christ, you know, and telling the Philippians that the Lord is near. You know, there's another way of looking at it as well, and that is the way we should or would understand it from the first reading. You know, the Lord speaking to Jerusalem and tells them to rejoice because the Holy One of Israel is in their midst. You know, in that way, the Lord is near. They had the Ark of the Covenant, and the Lord would manifest himself there at certain times. You know, and in that way, he was near to them. And he's near to us today in a variety of ways. You know, he's present to us, for instance, through his gift of sanctifying grace that we receive in baptism, and that for all those who are at least, you know, in the state of grace, he's near. He's among us in the Blessed Sacrament, so that you know we can come to him anytime and be able to pour out our hearts to him. You know, this is also a great cause for rejoicing. You know, imagine if we had to go through our lives, you know, day after day, knowing, you know, of course, that the Lord is real, that he's in heaven, and that we can pray to him. But you know, that just seems such a long, long way from us. We know in his mercy that he's not done that to us. He's not left us orphan. But that he promised he would be with us till the end of time. He has given himself to us in such an intimate way, not only being present in our churches, but actually coming into our heart and our soul when we receive him in Holy Communion. You know, he remains with us in the fullness of his presence, body, blood, soul, and divinity, in the Blessed Sacrament. In today's second reading, St. Paul also tells us that we should have no anxiety. You know, if God is with us, if he's for us, you know, who can be against? He tells us that we should pray, that we should pray with thanksgiving. If we look at our day-to-day lives, you know, there are thousands of things that we need to be thankful for, especially if we realize, I mean, that, you know, over a third of the population goes to bed hungry. How many people don't have a quarter of the things, you know, that we have, a roof over our head, and all of the creature comforts. And we need to thank God for that, St. Paul's telling us. Just think of our Lord as he was sitting at the Last Supper, knowing that the hour of his death was at hand, knowing that he was going to suffer more than any of us could even begin to imagine. And he gave thanks to God for that. In the midst of all the ingratitude of humanity over the centuries, for not even considering the sacrifice that our Lord has made for us, let alone giving thanks to him for it. You know, he continues to this day to give thanks to his Father, who is the creator of us all, and that our Lord is still giving thanks among us in the Thanksgiving sacrifice of the Eucharist. You know, that's what the word Eucharist means, thanksgiving. And our Lord's told more than one saint how man's ingratitude grieves him. And not only the ingratitude, but the sacrileges. You know, think of the desecration that happens every day. All the sins against the Blessed Sacrament. And Jesus continues to look at his Father and to say, thank you. He is so grateful for anyone that would adore him in the Eucharist, that he's willing to endure all of those outrages, even to be present for that one person who is going to love him as he deserves to be loved. For that one, he says, thank you. And the thanks are multiplied as many times over, you know, as there are more people who come to him. So if that is the way that Jesus is with us, you know, how should we be? We want to be like Jesus. So he is our teacher. You know, he is our master. He's the one who shows us the example and teaches us, you know, what we are to do. When we look at the sins against our Lord in the Eucharist, and then we look at our own lives, and we really need to ask ourselves, is there anything in my life that even remotely compares to a desecration of the Eucharist? Have we been offended or had to suffer some humiliation? Jesus says thank you. And should not we do the same? It is when we can see everything in our lives as coming from the hand of God, and when we can see everything, as a gift, ultimately, no matter how bad it might seem, that's when we can have that attitude of St. Paul, and that we can go before the Lord and say thank you with no anxiety and in the peace of Christ. That's when we will have begun to take on the mind of Christ. And that's when Christ will reign in our hearts and will be kept in the knowledge and the love of God and of His Son, our Lord Jesus Christ. That's the promise of St. Paul. And that's why we can rejoice no matter what happens. Even, as our Lord was preparing His coming as man, that we're preparing for to this Christmas, all that was so that He could make that sacrifice for love of us, and that He could redeem us and open up that gates, that He could show us His love. So let us show Him our love by preparing our hearts and making that sacrifice as a gift of love for Him, as He made that sacrifice for love of us.